To support our work at the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show and the work of other independent creators like us, sign up to listen to the podcast on Nebula. Nebula is the creator-owned streaming platform that hosts great videos and podcasts like the one you're listening to now. Sign up today at nebula.tv/picture show, and you will get access to this podcast plus other great podcasts and videos. Sign up at Nebula and help support independent media creators. That's nebula.tv/picture show.
I'm absolutely ready.
Hi, I'm Mortada.
And I'm Izzy.
And this is the Izzy and Mortada Picture Show. And it's the Oscars post-mortem.
Oh God, we're finally here.
Izzy, for the very first time, I watched the Oscars completely sober. because it was the day before Ramadan, even though I don't fast and I'm a secular Muslim. I just couldn't really bring it to myself to be that terrible, especially in my mom's house where, you know, it's a house that observes Ramadan. So I was like, you know what? I don't have to drink this one time.
Right. And how was that experience watching the Oscars sober?
I think it was okay. I paid more attention to the speeches. Usually you just sort of like don't pay attention to the speeches and then the next day you watch everything. I think I was in the right mind to pay attention to every word said, but also It just makes the show so long and such a slog. Like, you know, I'm obsessed with the Oscars. I love it. You know, everybody who listens to the podcast knows it. But I also think it's such a boring show because most of the awards, most of the winners, at least, you don't, I know this is sacrilege, but you don't really care about. Because they mostly say nothing except thank some strangers to us. Keep waiting for that speech. And I think we've got a few of those this year. What was your watching experience?
I was just in my apartment, also sober. I didn't want to make a big like to-do out of it this year. I wasn't really feeling in that mood. So I had a very calm, quiet evening, which did allow me to, you know, pay attention to everything pretty closely. I thought that the show actually moved pretty quickly. Like, I was surprised by the pace of the show because normally it does feel like a big slog. And mostly I feel like that happens because they put too much, like, I hate all the like comedy bits where they're like, let's do a little pre-recorded skit before this award. Like, I don't care. That's just a personal taste thing. And they really seem to minimize that this year. They did a couple of riffs and stuff, but I thought most of them were pretty successful with the exception of Jimmy Kimmel's opening monologue.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk briefly about him. I don't want to pay him too much attention, but I'm like, Jimmy Kimmel, you've hosted this several times. Movies that get nominated for Oscars are long. Stop making the movies a long joke because everybody makes that movie. It's stale. It's terrible. Have some respect for the movies, for the people you're celebrating. Their movies are long. Get over it.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, it's not a creative joke either. Like, it's not funny. It's disrespectful.
We've heard it.
We've Move heard on. It a billion times since The Irishman, since Silence.
Oh my
Get
God.
Get over it.
Get over it. Yes. I agree with you that the show moved fast because I remember when that Becky G song came out and they had like a children's choir. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare. And you know what? It was a nightmare, but it was very brief. It was maybe, I'm like, did they just give them 30 seconds? Because literally, I
looked
at
the song.
I looked at my phone and before I could read anything, it was over. And I'm like, wow, they're really keeping this going. Shall we just start with Best Actress? I think that's what everybody wants to hear about.
Or do we want to edge? Do we want to edge toward Best Actress?
Let's edge towards it. So let's start with something big. The actor's presentation, which we are both a fan of. in
Well, I'm gonna
theory.
amend this actually. Yeah.
Yeah, in theory, in theory. And so what did you think of those? Because from your reaction, I think we agree.
Okay, yeah, I think we might have had the same experience because I was so excited when I heard that this was happening, because I have very fond memories of that, especially like when you go back and watch them on YouTube, they're fun when that's happened in the past. But I think in the moment, a couple of things kind of rubbed me the wrong way. First of all, it takes up a lot of time, which we're already talking about a very long show. It like feels noticeably long. Two, you can tell who is actually a personal friend of the person they're talking about and who isn't. And sometimes that's a little awkward. And it like feels like some people got a little more attention in the curation of those individuals than others. And third, I really don't like how it kind of like overemphasizes the role of actors in film. Like, I know we both obviously love actors. My entire livelihood is built around telling the stories of actors, but like, this is a night to celebrate film in general. Like, if you're not going to do that for directors, if you're not going to do that for, I don't know, like editors showing what they did together, you know what I mean? Like, it feels so strange to kind of give actors this much airtime in a time when movie stars, like, kind of aren't even a draw anymore. They're not like the main puller of a film. It's very odd to me. So I like it in theory, but I just thought it did not work in this context.
So, I agree with all of what you said, but I also wouldn't care about any of this if the writing was good and if the pairings were good. Because I still remember the Penelope Cruz one, and the Penelope Cruz one was so good. And those actresses up there, from Whoopi to Tilda to even Goldie Hawn, who obviously doesn't know Taraji P. Henson, but she acted it. They all acted it, they were amazing. I think the writing this year was so bad in those things, so bad. And then I felt like in supporting actress, everybody tried to say my friend, and I'm like, Mary Steenburgen, you just met Emily Blunt. I do not believe for one second you are her friend, nor do I believe you, Lupita, about Dave Vine. But the only one I believed in supporting actress was actually Jamie Lee Curtis talking about Jodie Foster. She either really sold it really well, or she and Jodie Foster have just been best pals all their lives, because
I'm
that
sure
one
they
was
know each other. Yeah.
believable.
I
So,
thought Rita Moreno's was also really nice. Like, I know she and America Ferrera have like been put in a room together, you know? So like, I really believe that one as well.
yeah. But I thought the writing was so bad, and they made it. I think they maybe changed it in the middle because supporting actress was first, and they were all about, you're my friend, and I know you, and I love you. And by the time we got to best actress, which was last, it was less about that and more about just the performance. But also, it was so generalized, everything, oh, you were magical. You were
You
what?
conveyed emotion.
Yes, there
You
was.
read those lines, girl.
There was nothing specific about like any of these, as if Jessica Lange hasn't watched Maestro. Like, what are we doing here?
Right.
And the worst by far was Jennifer Lawrence talking about Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm like, she's never watched the movie. She's never met Lily. I don't know why she got this. And she was like just turning to look at the teleprompter. I'm like, girl, you're an actor. Memorize this. It's not that
But I
long. It's
also,
literally three sentences.
well, I also thought it was weird because I was like, Jennifer Lawrence, we know, is a very close personal friend of Emma Stone.
Yes.
So it's like, I would think the natural choice there would just be to have Jennifer Lawrence read Emma Stone's, but I
Yes.
guess it's not.
But I actually loved Sally Field reading Emma Stone, because guess what?
Yeah.
Sally Field is somebody who started as a comedian, who people were not taking her seriously until she became a drama actress, won two Oscars in quick succession, was a bona fide movie star. And that's kind of the career trajectory of Emma Stone. And so I thought that was the most relevant one to the history of the awards, not to them being friends or knowing each other, just to the history. A two-time best actress, giving a two-time now best actress winner, her talking about her, and their career trajectories kind of are similar. Not exactly the same, but similar enough. So I loved
Yeah.
Sally Field talking about Emma Stone.
Well, and here's what I will say. Like, we just, or I just shat on the concept of doing these introductions. But I will say one of the things I really like about it is that it does preserve that tether to like a sense of Oscars history and Hollywood history, in a way that I feel like the rest of the show has seemingly all abandoned. Like, the only thing that really exists anymore to like nod to the Oscars as like part of film history and like respectful of film history is like the Governor's Awards, which aren't on the show anymore and now
Oh
are
my
just a
God.
QR code.
Oh my
And
God,
then
that's
also like the In Memoriam segment was possibly the worst one I've ever seen in my life. Like, I mean, the way that there was like that final screen of just like names briefly flashing, and it's like Kenneth Anger and like Terrence Davies and like these big names that like got 0.2 of like size 12 font on a credit slide is really crazy. That's so crazy and disrespectful.
I mean, those two were so terrible. The In Memoriam thing, you couldn't read most of these names. I couldn't even see most of the, because we don't want to see what's on stage. Please stop the dancers. Like, we just want to see the people you're paying tribute to, show their faces, show their names. Like, that was horrible. And yes, oh God, the QR. Oh, that was embarrassing. Like, the career of these people, but look it up in the QR code. And then
I
the
know,
whole
it's so
thing of like
funny.
the Academy president trying to be a comedian, like, you know, trying to then talk to Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande as they're leaving while she's telling us about the QR code. I'm like, girl, you're the Academy president. You're a producer. You're not an actor. You'll never be funny. So I don't know why you're trying a comedy bit. That was terrible.
I don't even know if it was a bit. I mean, I feel like it was just an awkward miss choreographed moment, you know,
Okay, maybe.
like you're filming right where they're gonna be coming back, like for commercial break. That's not a good choice.
Let's go back to the actor presentation, because I just want to mention Nicolas Cage, because I think he was the best by far of all these presentations. Because also he did the thing that is very hard to do, in that he was so funny and so earnest at the same time. And usually you're either or, you're either funny or you're earnest. You can't be both. But he was, when he's like, when he talked about Paul Giamatti putting the glass eye, he's like, and I would have done it too. He was so sincere, but so funny, and it was a great moment. And that's the thing that you want to see. Again, it wasn't about his connection to Paul Giamatti as a personal friend or a good human being or whatever it is all the others were talking about, but it is about, I admire your performance because I would have done the same thing. I admire your process and I would have done the same thing. And that's what we want to see. It's about the process. It's about the acting. It's about what they do, instead of like, oh, I don't know, I met you at a party 5 years ago and now I call you my friend.
Yeah, totally. No, I thought it was really good. He did a good job on that.
He did a good job. But the men are always much less interesting than the women. I thought the pairing of Ryan Gosling was what is his name? The Quentin
Christoph
Tarantino,
Waltz. Oh,
Christoph Waltz.
yeah.
Yes.
That was
I was
great. I
like,
really liked his.
But it was such an odd pairing too, and you're like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, it was fun. I thought Jessica Lange was my favorite.
When
She
she talked about,
really ate up that
yes,
script.
she did. Well, this is the thing, and so is Sally Field, the other thing. So, my beloved Annette Bening, thank you, Annette Bening, for coming out of hiding for the last few weeks and showing up at the Oscars. And then the minute Charlize Theron started her speech to Annette Bening with, I've never been stung by jellyfish, I lost it. That was so, because I think in this podcast we've been saying that Naiad is such a camp, funny movie. And here is Annette Bening, an Oscar nominee for Best Actress, and they're talking about being stung by jellyfish. It just fit that movie. It was the best thing. Charlize also was looking at the teleprompter, but I just loved that her whole thing was about how Annette was realistic at playing stung by jellyfish. It's
I
just
felt like I was stung by a jellyfish. I'm so glad, Charlize. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, so that was amazing. That's, I think, also was one of the best moments.
I don't know. Okay, so you mentioned that you were off of Twitter mostly because of, time and place. I one of the discourses has been how winners greeted the group of actors upon finally going up to the stage to collect their award, because everybody kind of did it a little differently. And so, according to Twitter, most respectful, Cillian Murphy. Least respectful, Robert Downey Jr. Somewhere in the middle, Emma Stone. But I think it's not Emma Stone's fault. Something about like Jennifer Lawrence actually handing her the award or something. I don't know.
I think people have too much time on their hands. Like, get it over. This is an overwhelming moment. Nobody wants to spite one or ignore one. They're just overwhelmed and they're just acting as human beings act. And I can't believe I do know the controversy with Emma Stone, because apparently Michelle Yeoh had to release a statement, or like
Really?
a Twitter statement, where she said, basically, to Emma Stone, "Sorry, I confused you. I was supposed to hand you the award, but I know that you and Jennifer are besties. So I tried to give Jennifer the award to give to you, but in the whatever." And I'm like, people, because people were calling Emma basically racist because she
I
ignored
know. Yeah,
Michelle
I really
Yeoh.
turned to that really quickly. Yeah, it
And
did.
I'm just like, people, you're all idiots. Get off Twitter. And nobody is trying to spite anyone. It's just in the moment that happens. I actually had to unfollow a couple of people who are on that, because that went so fast and hard and everywhere that even me, ignoring Twitter, managed to see it.
Right, yeah. I've noticed, I think everyone's feeling very Kate Middleton pilled a little bit, in the sense that like every single screenshot of everything is kind of being picked apart in a way that I find a little extreme
And
for.
if you want to think Emma Stone is racist or Robert Downey Jr. is an asshole, by all means, go ahead. But there was no
Which,
evidence
like,
in this ceremony that they are.
right. I'm sure the latter may be true, but also, who knows? None of us know him.
Well, we can talk about like the Glazer speech, which I think was the best speech. But before we get to that, were there any
Yeah.
speeches that stood out for you?
Davine Joy Randolph, so it's really lovely.
That was very lovely, talking about how she doesn't need to change herself. And people have ragged on her all season because she read her speeches, but she didn't read this one, and it was so from the heart and beautiful. And she made Paul Giamatti cry on while sitting in his seat. Like, it was such a beautiful, beautiful moment. I don't like that movie, but I'm happy that they're friends and obviously respect each other. You see that every time she wins, like the respect between them is genuine, and she's such a genuine person. And I think, yes, she was the first person to win, and she set the tone with that speech. It was a great moment.
Yeah, really lovely. And also I think just like I get so bored of, like you said, people just reading names. So but I think definitely, obviously, the one everyone is talking about is Jonathan Glazer, which was, I think, the best speech of the night.
Yes, it was the best speech of the night. I think he was careful to write it down. I think his words were very specific, and he knew exactly what he wanted to say. And he also wanted to mention that, he mentioned all the images. He mentioned he's Jewish. He mentioned the Holocaust. He mentioned the hostages. He mentioned the occupation. He called out Gaza. So I think the words, and my problem is everybody, like, Cillian Murphy saying this is for the peacemakers. Not specific enough, dude. You need, if you
No.
want to mention this, you need to mention it. And I think Jonathan Glazer did. And he mentioned everything that needs to be mentioned, and his words were very specific. So yes, that's why it's the best speech.
Well, I think they were really specific, but I also, what I really appreciated about it was that it wasn't taglines. It wasn't a hashtag. What he was doing was like thinking through the message of his film and articulating how he believed his work it's speaking to our current moment and what that means to him. Like, this was very personal, and it was very, even if it was a political plea in some sense, it was very like well thought out. It wasn't trying to like score points with anybody. It wasn't trying to like appeal to any specific like ideology. It was just about like goodness, I guess, and like a very clear, I don't know, call to like reflect on what his film is talking about. So I thought that was great. And especially in the sense that like, there's so many other films that were just made about atrocities. Like Killers didn't win anything, so we don't know what anyone from that film would have said. But like Oppenheimer won a lot.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about anything.
Yeah.
As far as, I don't even remember them saying anything about Ukraine, if you want to go that far, except for the people from Ukraine.
Yes.
So, because that I feel is more relevant to the nuclear weapon question, is why I brought that up.
Yeah, totally. They should have said something.
But like Sean Lennon didn't say anything. His film is about war. He won.
He talks like, about Yoko Ono being 91 years old, which I was shocked at, but I guess that is her age.
Yeah. So I don't know. I found it extremely brave. You could tell he was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
What a bold move. It was amazing.
It's amazing. And and that speech will live forever. Like, people are gonna watch it and see it, and it's a record of the time we're in. And he took on that responsibility. I think he wasn't given a choice, considering what his film is about, but also he could have just ignored it, and he and his fellow filmmakers never ignored it. Whenever they won, whether at BAFTA or here, they mentioned what is happening right now in Gaza. So yeah, that's commendable.
One more thing I just want to add on that specifically is, like, I think that that is a film that is so open to misinterpretation. And I like that he's not really allowing that to happen. He's like, it's not about like the facts of XYZ. It is about like the power dynamic of what this, what this means.
Yep.
I like that he's not letting anyone get away with it.
Yes. Yes. So kudos to Jonathan Glazer. So 20 Days in Mariupol, which won Best Documentary, again, that was a very good speech. He talked about Ukraine, about the war. If there was one disappointment for me with that speech, is that what's happening in Ukraine is not the only atrocity happening in the world right now. And I wish that filmmaker, showed his solidarity to Gaza, to Sudan, to the Congo, or just doesn't even need to mention those countries or those conflicts, but just show some solidarity, because it's not the only conflict happening. And it's actually the conflict that most people know about and talk about. And when you have a forum like this, you should, as a documentarian, as somebody who deals with, real things, maybe tell people who don't what else is happening besides what they saw in your movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. It's very popular to kind of hate on Robert Downey Jr. right now, especially because he was allegedly so rude to everyone on the on the stage. But and I do think he has kind of like an annoying vibe. Like, I get why people are so annoyed by him. Like, he's very purposefully like swaggery and just like kind of makes his ego look huge. And so like, I get why you might have found that annoying, but I do still think back to how many years he really like struggled to be taken seriously because of everything that he went through with addiction and how like public that was. And that's what his speech was like, nodding at that. And even like Jimmy Kimmel was making fun of that. So I don't think that perception of him is dead necessarily. And so I was glad to see kind of, it's hard to say success story, because it's like probably the most rich person in Hollywood, like the most rich actor. But I don't know. I always like to see stories like that where it's like, you're not the worst moment in your life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he also just, to him being an asshole, like, he played up to being an asshole in the speech, which I thought was kind of funny. And his speeches, what I admired about his speeches all season, as somebody who gave so many of them, is that they were all different. He didn't repeat a speech. So there was effort. And I love the effort, unlike most people who just want everybody to be spontaneous and off the cuff all the time. I think if you know you're winning, show some effort. And his effort was trying to be funny. And I think even though I didn't laugh, but I like appreciated that he's doing a bit. You know what I mean? As opposed to just a bunch of thank yous.
Never would have voted for him.
Yes.
But, you know, it's fine.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about, obviously, let's start talking about the winners. So Oppenheimer won 7, and then in a surprise move, Poor Things won 4. Izzy, I do want to congratulate you as Maestro's big pro opponent. That Maestro went home empty-handed with 0 wins. It only had a chance in makeup, and when Poor Things won that, I
I
immediately
know.
texted you. I'm like, congratulations.
I know. Yeah, that was so crazy. I mean, well, when Poor Things started, I don't remember if I texted you this, but I know Poor Things started winning a bunch of production awards like pretty early.
Yeah,
And I was
one
like,
after the other, too, they
oh,
were in
yeah.
succession.
I was like, oh, like Emma Stone won.
Yeah, yes. I think
Like
we all
I got
thought
that.
that.
Yeah. Because I really did expect Barbie to nab like one of those. I wasn't really
Yeah.
sure which one it would be necessarily, but I
Yeah.
thought people would
Yeah.
go that way.
Totally. And the thing is, once it won makeup, because that was the one that everybody was begging for Maestro, because Maestro was the movie, the makeup movie. And Poor Things, nobody ever talked about its makeup, even though there is Willem Dafoe right there. And that's what won it the award. It wasn't Emma Stone's, long hair. It was the makeup on Willem Dafoe. And so nobody ever talks about that, but everybody talks about the nose and about Maestro. And so when that happened, I was like, ooh, what's going on here? And then it won costume design and production design. And we're like, ooh, 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 ooh.
Which
Yeah.
I think are good wins. I mean, those are
Totally.
my favorite parts of that movie.
Yeah,
And it
totally.
didn't
Yeah.
win screenplay, so I'm fine with that.
It didn't win screenplay, but it won Best Actress. So let's just go there. Emma Stone is a two-time Best Actress Oscar winner. She won her second Oscar. Is it 7 or 8 years? I think 8 years after her first one. And it's one of those things, like it reminded me her when I talked earlier about Sally Field, them being comedians and not being taken seriously. But I think this win also reminds me of Jodie Foster, in that the first win is not as strong as the second. And the first win was like, oh, wow, this is a movie star. This is somebody the industry will give opportunities to. We want to anoint her. So let's encourage her. And they gave her an Oscar when they could have just waited. Same thing happened with Jodie Foster, who also started acting really early, not, earlier than Emma Stone. And then she comes and gives a performance in a movie they love that wins several other awards, and everybody keeps saying it's the best performance of her career. And then they feel like they have to give her another one. And in both cases, I think the second win would have sufficed, and they didn't need the encouragement win.
I mean, I agree. I was always very much in camp Isabelle Huppert
Yes, yeah.
that year. So,
Yeah.
you know, I've been living with this. And here we are again.
Yeah.
Emma
So,
Stone's war against French cinema, I guess. And
well, Killers of the Flower. Oh, I guess
of
that's Sandra
course,
Haller, yeah.
that's who I was thinking of. But
Yeah,
yes, of
Sandra
course,
Haller,
Lily
yeah.
Gladstone is the actual story here.
Yeah. So let's just tackle this story. So why did Lily Gladstone not win? I think the one thing that I keep going back to is when we talked last week, remember when we were talking about Glenn Close, and I said the difference is that Glenn Close's movie was unpopular, nobody saw it. But as it happened with 4 Oscars for Poor Things and 0 for Killers, maybe Killers wasn't loved either, despite the 10 nominations. And maybe that was in the end the sort of like factor of like the Academy just doesn't like Killers of the Flower Moon, and they were not ready to give it any Oscars. One of the reasons. Yeah.
I'm having trouble figuring out like how exactly I'm falling on it, but I think I am edging toward that explanation as well, where it's like, how do you reconcile something getting so many nominations but like not winning anything? And I think one of those reasons is like, I don't think we're living in a world where like something as based in reality as Killers of the Flower Moon is like not as interesting of a production design as Poor Things. It's not as interesting as costuming for a lot of people. I don't think so, but like, you know, like it's just, it feels so real that it's harder. It's not going to catch your eye as much. And I feel like that's kind of what Poor Things is. Like, it's so flashy and it's so strange that it's more memorable, maybe. I don't know. Like, it's so hard for me to say because I don't necessarily agree with this.
Yeah. And it's always when there's been a sort of like neck and neck acting lead award between two people. The person in the more popular movie, the one that won more Oscars, the one that was just people liked more, won. Like if you look at last year, Michelle Yeoh versus Cate Blanchett, in the end, Everything Everywhere won 7 Oscars and Tar won 0. So that's why Michelle
Yeah.
Yeoh won. She was in the more popular movie. Even though she and Kate were neck to neck, or you look at Anthony Hopkins and Chadwick Boseman, it's the same thing. Ma Rainey wasn't nominated for Best Picture. It won, I think, for makeup. But then, you know, the father was the surprise winner that year of things like adapted screenplay, and it was nominated in editing. So it ended up being more popular than Ma Rainey, which wasn't even nominated for Best Picture. You can also talk about Nomadland. And how Frances McDormand, because that year at every ceremony there was a different winner in Best Actress. And in the end, the Best Actress who won Best Actress was the one in the movie that won Best Picture, as opposed to all the other ones. So I think that's an explanation, but also I think we can't ignore that the Academy is still racist. Most of the people who
Well, yeah, that's
vote,
what I was gonna say. Yeah.
yeah, are white middle-aged men. And Emma Stone is in that sweet spot of somebody in childbearing age whom they love and is hot and is in a movie they like more.
Well, I think, yeah, I think it's like a racial dimension and kind of a
And she's white,
political
obviously.
dimension of that. Yeah, like I think the racial implication is kind of has to do with white guilt because I'm thinking, I mean, this is something I've talked a lot about this year, is kind of like this series of films that are kind of talking about looking backward and thinking about the oppressor's point of view and how you kind of reckon with that. I think Oppenheimer was the most sympathetic and least complex of all of those films. And if we're talking about a specifically American perspective, Killers of the Flower Moon was the most or more complex and more damning of, I think, like the white American system, I guess. So, like, not zone of interest, because that's very European and separate, I think, or in how people think about it. But I think I have to honestly believe that, like, a lot of people who watch Killers of the Flower Moon are very uncomfortable with it and, like, aren't sure how to kind of like reckon with it. And sort of, I think it makes it a little easier to kind of disregard it and like put it to the side in a way that, like, Oppenheimer makes you feel a little bit better, or like gives you a hero, or gives you somewhat something a little more digestible to wrestle with, which makes it like the perfect Oscar movie, I guess. And for Killers, it's sort of like, I just have to believe that, like, because I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to articulate it, but I think that has to do a lot with it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think if we look at the fact that Scorsese's last three movies were all, not last three, but also The Irishman and Gangs of New York, movies that talk, their thesis is that America is rotten at the core, and this is why. That's what this is, the movie he keeps making. He keeps making. He used to set it in Gangsterland and with Killers. He set it and, was in the Osage story. But the thesis is the same. This country is rotten, and this is why. And I think that is, to your point, an uncomfortable thing that a lot of people don't want to deal with. But he's such a star that the movie, and he's such an accomplished filmmaker, and everybody he works with is so good at what they do, from editing to costumes to whatever. So they can't really ignore it, but then they don't love it. They might reject it. But nobody loves that message. And I think that's why his movies, this is the same thing that happened to The Irishman. His movies keep not winning anything. It's because I think people, with Oppenheimer, it's very easy. You know, at every scene in that movie who you're supposed to root for and who's the bad guy. There is no moral dilemma at its center at all.
I know. I was telling this to my friend yesterday. I was like, you literally don't have to interpret
Yes.
anything in Oppenheimer. Like,
Totally. It's spoon
it's pretty
feeding you.
straightforward.
Yeah.
Whereas like the last 5 minutes of Killers of the Flower Moon is like a more interesting text to me than like all
Yeah,
of
totally.
Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
I
So
think, to kind of go off your point, I think that that's totally true. And it makes me really sad because I think it's just, it goes to reinforce like how silly some of these online discourses are about Martin Scorsese, because he's sort of talked about as this, like, the father of cinema. And of course he is to a lot of cinephiles and whatnot, but like this demonization of him as like the man, or like this person who like hates popular film or whatever. And it's like he can't even get shit at the Academy Awards, which is like the most basic, like mainstream definition of prestige film. So it's sort of, it's very silly of like, I don't know, I want someone to, I hope he gets some sort of like lifetime special thing at some point.
I mean, you should have more than one Best Director award. Come on, Academy. The other thing I want to talk about, and I'm sorry to everyone, I'm going to go on a rant a little bit, because I'm really mad at people who keep judging performances in movies using their fucking stopwatches. Because this is the thing that also is going now. Lily Gladstone should have gone supporting. She has, I don't know how many minutes versus Leo, how many minutes. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is art. This is movies. This is something that is completely subjective. You can't. How are you doing this anyway? How are these people counting these minutes? Are they just sitting there with a stopwatch? And when she's on, they put it on. And when she's off, they're like, what the fuck is this? What if the scene has two people? Do you, like, when the camera goes to her, you add to her time? And when the camera goes off her, you minus it from her time? Like, what the fuck is this? This is not how movies are judged. She should not have gone supporting. She is the heart of that movie. And at the end, the whole Scorsese thing is that he's paying homage and tribute when he appears on screen to Molly Burkhart. This is, yes, the point of view in the movie is the Leo DiCaprio character. I'm not disputing that. But that doesn't mean there is one lead to this fucking movie. They could be more than one lead to a movie. And Lily Gladstone, as I mentioned before, wanted to be seen as a leading lady, and she is following the blueprint of Viola Davis, another person who refused to go supporting, went lead, and became a leading lady. This is how she is now going to book leading roles. And people who are so like, Lily Gladstone didn't win, that's the end. Like, do you, Lily Gladstone wasn't discovered yesterday. Martin Scorsese didn't discover her. She is somebody who's been working steadily for at least a decade, who's worked with, like, top directors like Kelly Reichardt, who's won awards for her work in certain women, who is well respected. She's not a movie star like Emma Stone or Charlize Theron or whatever, but she is an actor who's respected, who will always be cast because she is at the top of her game. And now she's a nominee for Best Actress. She's been seen as a leading lady. So yes, she didn't win the award, and we're all disappointed. I also wanted her to win, but I think she's going to be okay. And she already booked her first lead role after this. She's going to be fine, and hopefully in a few more years she'll be back at the Oscars.
I feel like there is like sort of an infantilization going on with Lily Gladstone, where it's sort of like Emma Stone wasn't trying, like she wanted her to win, like playing with kid gloves with her. Do you know what I mean? Like, talking about her in this way where it's like her career's over now, everything's done, like she had this one shot, shouldn't we have all just voted for her just because, like, no, like she has an entire, she has so many things like already on deck that are really exciting to me. I'm really excited to see the way that people develop her range, because I've seen her in a handful of things. I haven't seen what is it,
Fancy Dance. She's great.
Dance.
It's a she's so wonderful.
Is
In
that
it.
A comedy?
No, it's not a comedy. It's a very serious drama. It's a
Okay.
tragedy. Yes, she's so
Oh,
good.
great. yeah, I'd love to see her, like, I don't know, branch out, do all kinds of different things. Like, I think it's gonna be great. I'm really excited for her. I hope she has a ton of things and we'll see her again in this category. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, and I think we will. And I think even if we don't see her in this category again, because you never know with Oscar, you know, a lot of people get that one nomination and that's it, as you know. But like, I think she is going to continue her very interesting career. Like, she already has an interesting career. She's already well thought of by the industry, by her peers, by everyone. Like, she is a respected actor. So she's gonna have an interesting career no matter what, whether she comes back to the Oscars or not.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited. I guess I've been thinking about, like, obviously for my channel, what I need to be doing. I'll actually ask your advice on this, because I personally, I don't know if I'm just being like annoying, because obviously I wanted Sandra Hüller to win, but I knew that wasn't going to happen. So I kind of was like getting really pumped for a Lily Gladstone win. And I was like, I had this list of like everybody who I was going to ask to like interview about this, and like historians and professors and like all these books I was going to read and all this stuff. And then it's like with Emma Stone, it's like, I'm not interested. I don't even know what to latch on to. I'm just
Yeah.
like,
All right. So I think you should do the Lily part, because I
yeah.
know Lily didn't win, but she was nominated. And I think she won several awards in the lead up to winning. And she stepped up her career, which is what you do with an Oscar. So she
Yeah.
already has all the games and she represented herself well. So there is no loss here. So I think
Yeah.
you should do Lily. But I also, you know, like I talked with Emma, I think the Emma hook is that she's somebody the industry wants to see work for a long time. She's
But
somebody
it's
they're
like,
like,
we knew that. Do you
yeah,
know
we
what I
knew
mean?
that. Yes.
Like, this
But you
doesn't
know,
change anything except giving her another bookend, which makes me
totally.
a little upset.
Yeah, totally. I'm with you 100%, but that's why she won.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people can quibble, but it's thought of as, oh my God, she paid off on the promise. And so whenever somebody like that pays off on their promise, they win a second one. Jodie Foster did that. Sally Field did that. Gwyneth Paltrow did it. She also won the sort of like, oh, we think you're going to be big. You're at the beginning. Let's encourage you. But then she never got nominated again because like, oh, girl, we were wrong about that. So these things happen. And this is what makes the Oscars interesting. And yes, we all wanted Lily to win. But hey, it's out of our hands, right?
Yeah. I know it does still make me a little upset to like miss a historic opportunity, to be honest.
Yeah, it would have been a moment and a historical
Yeah.
event. And yeah, and I personally like the same thing when I last week I said let Coleman win, let's have the first out actor win for playing a queer role, because guess we want these firsts to end, so then you know we can move on. We can't still 100 years into the Oscars be talking about the first Native American actress to win. Like, come on. So
I
let's choose.
also, yeah, I do wonder how, if Apple kind of missed some, like, messed up.
How do you
You
think
know,
they messed up?
well, I guess maybe this goes back to what I was saying earlier, because I'm thinking about like Coda winning. And how that kind of had this last minute push and this huge wave of marketing. And it's like, I don't even think I heard the song for that was nominated for best song from Killers of the Flower Moon until last night. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like besides Lily Gladstone, there was almost zero push for that film.
Well, they did get 10 nominations. So I think what happened
Yeah.
is, you know, they pushed, they were pushing, you know, at the beginning, they pushed enough to get 10 nominations. And then once they did that in the second part or phase two or whatever, they looked at realistically where they can win, and it was best actress. And so that's where
Yeah.
they concentrated. So
Yeah.
I do not think there was anything wrong with the campaign, because they got, except for Leo, they got all the nominations they could get. They only missed Leo and maybe screenplay, whatever. So they missed two. And then they knew the one they could win is best actress, and that's where they push. And so I'm repeating myself. But anyway, I think the campaign is fine, and campaigns can do so much.
Yeah.
I'll go back
Okay.
to my point earlier. Like, people just don't love that movie. I love it, you love it, but people just don't love it. Like, in the end, you can't do anything if people just don't love your movie.
Yeah. I guess is maybe my question is, can marketing overcome that? Can you market someone into liking a movie? I feel like, because I feel like that's what happened with Coda.
Yeah, but Coda, I think, had
Coda's
those
easier
people.
to like, you
Yeah,
know what
but
I mean?
also,
Yeah, I
like,
get that.
I think of Coda like a Jamie Lee Curtis win. Like, Coda had those actors going out meeting all of the voters, basically, and campaigning to win. And that's what Jamie Lee Curtis did last year. She was just everywhere. Lily was everywhere. But in the end, they just didn't love her movie.
It's so crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as we know, I've like soured more and more on Poor Things.
Yes, I know
So
that.
yeah, it's like, I don't want to, I'm trying not to be like an active hater because I don't like doing that, but
Yeah.
it's not easy to absorb for me.
So tell me more about this. So you think, what do you think they could have done to make Lily win over Emma, considering everything we talked
Oh,
about?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any further thoughts on it. I'm just like trying to figure, I'm trying to like, I guess, grasp for meaning in it, in like Emma Stone's win. That's a little more complex than people like the movie. Because like that is the easiest answer, and I think that's right. But I also like, I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm still like just hung up on it.
Yeah, I mean, it is
For
very
personal, for like personal preference reasons and no other reasons.
Yeah, I think it's very disappointing, because we all thought it's going to happen. But that's what makes the Oscars interesting. Like, I think this is one of the things, if you want to go back to the whole ceremony, is that the only surprise really is that how well Poor Things did. Not just winning Best Actors, but winning makeup and winning both production design and costume design. And so that's what's surprising. The rest was all expected. The rest is everything that's been winning. Oppenheimer has been winning all season. So has Dave Vine. So has Robert Downey Jr. So has Cillian Murphy. So it's just like, hey, that's the
And also,
only.
so has Emma Stone. I mean, like, I think we're also forgetting this. Like, she's won so many major awards. Obviously, Lily has too, but like, there was every indication that Emma Stone had a legitimate shot.
Oh yeah, yes. I mean, I think,
Like,
yeah, I think they were neck and neck, right? I think they were neck and neck. Like, they were winning. They're basically, either one of them would win.
yeah.
Because Lily has won over Emma at SAG. But yeah, but yes. Yeah. So it wasn't a huge surprise, but I think it was a surprise just because we all expected a different outcome.
Had been rooting mentally elsewhere.
Yes. Do you want to talk about the Just Scan? Because I think that was a lot of fun. And
I thought it was great.
yeah.
I really loved it. It also made me like wish that that had won over, like, if we're gonna have a Barbie song win, I would rather have had that win than What
The
Was I
Billie
Made For?
Eilish. Yeah. Yes,
Yeah.
it's reinvigorated the show, right? Like, because I think the Billie Eilish song was very boring, the way they presented it. And, you know, I loved what they did with the Killers song, in that they shot it from above so you could see the drums, and that was amazing. But Ryan Gosling just gave us what we need, which is like a shot of adrenaline, a movie star vamping it up for the camera. He was playing Marilyn Monroe at one point. He was making Emma Stone and Margot and Greta Gerwig sing along with him. He did the thing that you expect. Give this a show. This is why you are a list talent. And you are on TV, watched by millions of people. Put on a show for fuck's sake. And they did.
It was a very cute performance. It was really fun. I think it is ultimately just really funny that this like really gorgeous Osage performance was like placed in the same category as like a Flamin' Hot Cheetos song. Do you know what I mean? It like feels
Yeah.
so inappropriate.
Yes. And also, songs in movies, like, yes, Barbie had all these songs, but whatever. But if they want to, I know I've talked before that they should put the shorts in a different ceremony because they do not belong in the film year. But I also think songs in movies are not a thing anymore. Do we still need a best song category? And I know people are going to be mad about this, but do we need it? Does Billie Eilish need two Oscars at 22 when Martin Scorsese has one and he only one and he had like an almost 60-year career? Like, it's not movies. What Billie Eilish does, what Diane Warren does, yes, it's part of movies, but it's not really filmmaking. And it kind of bothers me.
Well, at least I will say with like I'm Just Ken and What Was I Made For? Like, I think both of those play pretty pivotal parts in that film.
Yes.
Like, What Was I Made For is the like a the period to the film. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. No, totally. But like you mentioned the cheetah song or cheeto or whatever that is.
Right. I mean, that's a grift. That's a grift.
I will never see that movie. And most of them don't. Most of the songs nominated don't play prominently in the movie or not part of the fabric of the film. They're just the end credits or something they do after they finish the movie. They're like, oh, we should get a nomination. So let's put a song in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we're gonna get a new Wicked song out of this Oscar.
Yes, just so they can be nominated for
Yep.
no other reason. So yeah.
I mean, they have to fill the two films somehow.
Yeah.
So, gotta have a new song, I guess.
Yes. So let's talk fashion before we end. Who were your standout fashion moments?
I really liked Sandra Hollers. I mean, I sound like such a unrepentant stan, but like I genuinely did like her Schiaparelli dress. I thought it was really lovely. I thought Carey Mulligan looked really beautiful. That dress fit her like a glove.
Yeah, that it's also it's like a it's a take on a classic Balenciaga dress from the year that Felicia married Leonard Bernstein. And so it was recreated specifically to her, and that's why it fit her so well. And she looked amazing. It's the best she ever looked. And yeah, I think that was
Yeah.
my favorite.
The Schiaparelli gown, I think, was also based off of an Adrian gown. So that's like kind of a tie-in to old Hollywood as well.
Yeah. See, we
I
love
thought America
those.
Ferrera looked great.
Yeah,
I
and she
thought
was
that
doing
dress looked
Barbie.
beautiful
Yeah,
on her.
yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. And see, this is the kind of these dramas and these linkages are kind of what makes the Oscars fun and what makes talking about them fun. So I appreciate the effort of these actresses who, yes, they're famous actresses going to the Oscars. They have a lot of help. But you could just, I don't know, wear a peplum dress like Emma Stone did and not think too much about it. A dress that actually wasn't even constructed that well, apparently. But these actresses thought a little bit about, what this moment means. So yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have any stand? I didn't. I thought the men kind of flopped. I feel like suits have been getting really creative recently, and there were really none of those.
Yeah, and
I don't
if you
even think
were.
very many did anything other than black.
I mean, I think Colman Domingo, as usual, looked it was a black suit, but it was sharp and it was so well fit and he had a lot of jewelry on, so he looked good. But this is, I think, where
Yeah.
the Oscars fit, like just because they are the Oscars, everybody feels like they need to be respectful. And so even somebody like Colman Domingo, who is usually more exuberant in how he dresses, he's a first-time nominee at the Oscars. He's just like, I'm gonna go classic. His take on classic, which is more than what everybody else was doing, but it's still within that framework of the classic talks. So, Izzy, this is sort of our postmortem in the Oscar. I think we touched on all the big points. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with before we go?
What a year, what a good year for cinema. It was a year that kind of revitalized my interest in film culture, like current film culture. And so I feel really happy that we got to spend it together. And I'm excited for what this year brings.
Yes, I love that. I also saw this is a fantastic year. And of course, it was fantastic to talk about all these movies with you and to have this long season in your company. It's been a pleasure and a joy. And to hear from all our listeners, that was so much fun. And so we're going to be taking a short break because I have to be in Copenhagen for a film festival next week. But we will be back soon. Look out for us on the internet, on Instagram and Twitter at IMPictureShow. Follow us there, ask us questions, and we'll let you know on those channels when we will be back. It will probably be like a couple of weeks, maybe more, so that we can start a new year. And you can find me on Instagram at Murtada underscore E and on Twitter at ME underscore says.
And you can find me at BK Rewind and on Twitter and BK underscore Rewind on Instagram.
And until next time, thank you for listening.